let me briefly review the general philosophy here. This is a Spanish I showed last time. It shows the standard large N expansion of a gauge theory in two double line notation. And the theme of this lecture, and we would like to literally, we want to literally interpret the gauge theory as an open string field theory without taking any low energy limit. And we want to replace holes with punctures. That's the basic message of these lectures upon integration over the modulus, which corresponds to the size of the boundary. We want to replace the boundary state with a closed string punctures and summing over the holes exponentiates this deformation to a smooth classical deformation of the closed string background. And so T, the tooth parameter, is naturally interpreted as it should be as a closed string modulus, a geometric modulus of the background. So the type of equivalence we're looking for here is an equivalence between the open string partition function as a function of the open moduli, which are schematically represented here by Zi, where I goes from 1 to n, which is the number of boundary components, and the closed string partition function as a function of the closed string background, which is encoded in the sources tk for the closed string vertex operators. And this is the statement of open-closed duality. We are trading the open moduli for the closed moduli, and we want to see this happen at the level of worksheet perturbation theory according to this picture that I'm going to draw again, that the open diagram with of a certain genus and with a certain number of holes becomes a diagram of the same genus where each hole is replaced by a puncture. And for this to make sense, as I was telling you last time, the zeroth order check is that the open string moduli space and the closed string moduli space should be related in some simple way. And in fact, amazingly, there is this natural isomorphism that decomposes the moduli space of open surfaces of genus G with H hole as a direct product. There is no trivial, no non-trivial fibration or anything like that. It's literally a direct product of H parameters that represent the size of the holes times the moduli space of Riemann surfaces with P equals H punctures. So last time I started to prove this relation, which is a mathematical theorem. I'm giving you obviously a sort of abbreviated physics style proof. And the proof taught us a few interesting, so the first half of the proof was giving a natural description of the moduli space of genus G with H holes. We obtain this classic result that we can triangulate the moduli space using flat strips of width pi and cubic vertices. So I was drawing last time the simple example of the decomposition of the sphere with three holes, which is given by this diagram, plus its cross diagrams, and this diagram, which lies in the middle of the moduli space. So I'm just reviewing what I did last time, and I'm interested so far in surfaces which are which don't have any external open string vertex operator. If I included those, of course, those would be represented by semi-infinite strips, where you think of course, the incoming state being infinitely far in this particular realization of the geometry of the surface. So remember, the basic idea behind this decomposition of the moduli space was that we were able to pick a preferred metric. A complex structure specifies an equivalence class of metrics, and we picked a specific representative so that we have an isomorphism between a complex structure and a specific metric which obeys this minimal area condition that I was describing last time. So this is a review. And now let's move on. We want to prove that the composition of the OpenSea moduli space. And as usual, I need to show a error in both directions. So let's start with the trivial error now, the open to close inclusion. So given a surface which I want to show that I can go from the open moduli space to the closed one times r plus to the h. And given this is the composition of the moduli space, now this is a trivial matter because, first of all, I record the length of the boundary components, Li, in this special metric, I goes from 1 to h. So given an open surface in this set with a specific complex structure, I can map it in the following way. First of all, I record the values of the length of the boundary components, that's clearly r plus to the h. And then I need to tell you how to get a closed surface. But given this description of the moduli space, nothing could be easier. Because what I'm going to do, I'm going to glue to each boundary component a semi-infinite flat cylinder. So to each boundary component, I'm going to glue a semi-infinite flat cylinder that goes on forever. What is the resulting surface? Well, clearly, it's a closed surface with number of punctures equal to the number of original holes, because now this semi-infinite tube is a closing puncture. There is a metric on the surface, so that uniquely specifies a complex structure, and this is my closed surface. So that describes the error from the left to the right. That was the easy step, given, of course, this is the composition of the moduli space of open surfaces. Now we need to go back. So now what we want to do is to go back. Obviously, we need to give some kind of description of the moduli space of closed surfaces of a certain genus with a certain number of punctures. So the thing that you may be tempted to do is to imitate the strategy that we use for open surfaces. And remember, that strategy led us naturally to a decomposition of the OpenSea moduli space that arises from open string field theory. So as I was telling you last time, it's obvious once you have got this far that this decomposition of the moduli space is literally the Feynman diagram expansion of an open string field theory with only a cubic vertex, where the propagator builds the flat strip. So in this description of the open moduli space, one property is obvious. It's the factorization on the open string poles. When the propagator becomes very long, remember this is the Schwinger parameter, the length of the propagator, which is related in this fashion to 1 over L0 in the usual way. So the region of the moduli space where the open propagators become very long is related in the usual way in a field theory to the imaginary part of the amplitude, which is related to zeros of L0, which is the open string Hamiltonian. So this decomposition of the open string moduli space exhibits manifestly factorization over on-shell open string states. It turns out that this remarkable field theory also contains closed string poles. Those arise in non-planar diagrams in which you have a loop. if you in the dual channel, this, there are regions in moduli space where you have an infinitely long tube. So this theory, although it was somehow manufactured to have manifest factorization over the on-shell open string states, also contains all the correct closing poles. And the way you should think about this, you should not be tempted to say that the theory is incomplete and you want to explicitly add an extra closed part. That is not the right thing to do. Rather, you should think of the closed string poles here as poles that arise from composite operators, very much like, perhaps not very much, but a loose analogy might be in QCD, you are not adding global degrees of freedom by hand. The globals arise as on-shell poles, if, for example, on the lattice, if you compute physical correlators. So why am I telling you this? Well, it's very relevant for what we are doing here because we are trying to reinterpret the purely closed theory as arising from the open theory. And in the spirit of open-closed duality, here we see sort of the prototypical example in which open-closed duality is working, where we do not really need a explicit closing set. The open theory is doing everything for us. So this leads me to the next step, which is how do we now describe the closed moduli space with of genus G with P punctures? So if you were to imitate what we did for the open string case, you may be tempted, and in fact this has been done in great detail by Barton Zwieback, you are very tempted, and it's a natural thing to try, to give a decomposition of the moduli space of closed surfaces which has manifest factorization over the closing poles. So such a decomposition would be based on closed string propagators and closing vertices, in which now these propagators would join, for example, at a cubic vertex and so on. And it turns out that you can indeed give such a decomposition which has manifest factorization over the on-shell closing states. But the resulting theory is extremely complicated. Unlike the open string case where with a simple cubic vertex you were able to cover moduli space, in this case you can see, for example, in the simplest example, already the level of the four-point amplitude, if you try to reproduce the Virasoro-Shapiro amplitude, you can check that just introducing a cubic vertex will not do. There's a finite region of the moduli space that requires to introduce an irreducible quartic vertex that takes up a finite region of the moduli space, unlike in the open string case, and the thing goes on forever. You need infinitely many vertices, and even, in fact, at the level of at the quantum level, when you consider higher genus surfaces, you even need to introduce vertices which have higher genus. So we will not follow that path. We are interested in a very different way of thinking about the closing theory. We want to prove this relation. So we are not going to look for a decomposition of the closing moduli space based on a manifest factorization over the on-shell closing poles. We will try to do something else. So once you start thinking along this line, it's actually kind of natural. There's a natural way to get what we want. And the natural strategy, so we will give up factorization over on-shell closing states, and rather, partly motivated by the minimal area strategy was so successful last time, given a surface with a certain complex structure, with a certain number of punctures, a certain genus, we will look for the area, for we will, as again, we need to pick a special representative among all possible metrics. And the thing which turned out to be successful is now to look for the metric of minimal area under the condition that such that curves homotopic to the punctures have lengths which are greater or equal than some specified numbers that I will call Li. Obviously, I'm doing this because I know what I want. I want to prove that theorem. So given a closed surface, I need to pick some extra data, which are H positive real numbers. And those numbers I use in the definition of my minimal area condition on the metric that I can impose, that I can add. I want to add the metric structure to this Riemann surface, and such a metric structure has to obey this condition. So of course, I'm hiding the non-trivial aspects of this in quoting theorems again, and in fact, the theorem due to Strebel is again an existence and uniqueness theorem. Given the complex structure, there's a unique minimal area metric that obeys these length conditions. Yes. So the one of the intuitions is that given the complex structure there's an equivalence class of metrics, and so we need to impose some additional conditions on the metric. So we are looking for something that specifies a metric uniquely. So it's natural to set up an extremal problem. Okay, no, I'm giving up modular. Okay, so in Barton's decomposition of the moduli space, you're solving a diff. So this is not what Barton did. So Barton's conditions turn out to be quite different and are conditions which are designed having modular invariance in mind. You want to impose conditions which are naturally modular invariant so that you get a manifest factorization. Maybe if I go on a little bit, you will see why this is a natural thing to do. Because I want to recover that, I want to, given H extra, why is this natural? Well, I want, given that you know that is true, how would you go about proving it? I give you an element in M closed. I need to give you some H extra numbers, one number for each puncture. So what is the length condition that is natural in this concept? Well, it will be a length condition having to do with curves homotopic to each puncture. So that's the intuition behind this. And so also we want to recover the decomposition of the open moduli space that I talked about last time. And we will now see that this is doing precisely that, because if I have a puncture, and if I go in coordinate units closer and closer to my puncture, my length cannot get smaller than this preferred number Li. So clearly what I'm doing here, as I go closer and closer to the puncture, I'm endowing the metric endowing the surface with a metric that looks like a semi-infinite tube again. Right? The puncture, so if I have my puncture here, P, I surround it by some curves, and this is a different presentation of the same story where now the puncture is all the way to infinity here, and these circles, this would be circle C1, it would be circle C2, are now the circles around this cylinder, closer and closer to the puncture. And the circumference of the circle, so the circumference of the cylinder is equal to L of P. So we get now a decomposition. We are endowing now this surface with a metric that locally is just a semi is built out of semi-infinite cylinders. And then, so there are as many semi-infinite cylinders as there are punctures, and then somehow, all of a sudden, all the semi-infinite cylinders must be glued in a complicated way, and the modular parameters of the closed surface, the -6 + 6 g + 2 p moduli, are all encoded in the gluing conditions. And then, of course, there are p extra numbers that are the length Li. Here a question.
So the area is always infinite.
Okay, good question. So the area is often infinite. What I really mean here is there is an obvious notion of regularized area, of reduced area, you can define by simply subtracting the logarithmic divergence that you get from the semi-infinite tube. And it's easy to check that it doesn't really matter how you do it, because you can do it in a way which is independent of the complex structure. So indeed, it's the you have to subtract out this trivial divergence. So, well, very good. So now I've given you a presentation of the closed moduli space times RH. And this is really not the same decomposition that arises in the usual presentation of the closed moduli space, which is based on higher and higher vertices. Here, all the modular parameters are hidden in a complicated way in these gluing conditions of the semi-infinite cylinders. They're not related. In the usual decomposition, the modular parameters of the closed surface are just the Schwinger parameters of the closing propagators. This is not the same decomposition as given here. Good. So, but now you see we are in good shape, because it's obvious what's the next step. I want to revert the error. So I need to tell you how to go from here to here. I think I've said this infinitely many times by now. So I want to an F closed open type of map. But given this decomposition, it's obvious what one should do. To get the open surface, I'm going to simply cut out the ends of the semi-infinite tubes and get a surface with boundaries. And to be precise, what I'm going to do is to require that the height of each of these stubs is pi over 2. The height from the boundary to this non-trivial point where all the semi-infinite cylinders meet. And if you stare at this for a bit, with use a little bit of imagination, unfortunately I cannot draw very well, but you will recognize that this is our good old decomposition based on strips of width pi. Because this is the boundary component, so from any boundary component to the closest boundary component, the width is at most pi. not sure if you can see that, but you can perhaps start to visualize this if you start from the sphere with three punctures, and you impose a certain, suppose let's do the simplest case. Suppose I impose some length conditions around each of these punctures in such a way that the length conditions are the same, so I impose that L1 equal L2 equal L3. Then if you think about it a bit, you're gluing this cylinders, and what you're getting is what I was drawing in notations of last time in this fashion. You get the diagonal that was in the middle of the open stream moduli space, where these lengths here are the lengths of the boundary components, and the width is pi. Is this clear, or? It's the same metric. It's a you see, it's a flat metric. So I'm the point of giving this the composition, so the moduli space, both for the open and the closed one, so the metric is flat almost everywhere. And now what I got here by amputating the semi-infinite cylinder is an open surface of genus G and with H bounded with a metric which is flat almost everywhere, and such that the width, well, you could formulate now in the language of the condition on the area that I was giving you before. If you think a little bit about it, it's clear that any non-trivial open curve is at most pi. I mean, is cannot be become any smaller than pi, because the heights of my stubs are pi over 2. So no matter what you do, you can never get a non-trivial open curve which is more than pi. The metric is flat everywhere. It's the minimal area metric, so you better get the same metric as we got last time. So that does the job. I've described you the reverse error. You give me H numbers, which are the non-trivial length conditions around each punctures, and I can revert the error and obtain the decomposition that I was promising. So, yes. So, okay, you may be a little bit troubled by this blob that was not making very explicit here. So. So one thing is clear, that the stubs all end together in some sense, that there is a non-trivial graph, a non-trivial one-dimensional curve, which gives you the pattern of gluing. So in other terms, one perhaps better way in which you could describe this, you have the semi-infinite cylinders, and now, so I'm describing here now the local coordinates on each semi-infinite cylinder. Now I need to tell you how the boundaries are glued. So I will pick some points here and glue things in a certain way at the boundary, in a non-trivial way. So the gluing surface, the gluing curve is made out of, I need to tell you a way in which these circles are glued together. So this is, of course, a very hand-waving description. So since, after all, this is a school, so we're not in any hurry to do anything really new. So there is another way in which you can convince yourself that this is the correct thing, which so let me briefly review that way. So it turns out that all of these minimal area metrics arise from quadratic differentials. So let me tell you what is a quadratic differential. A quadratic differential is an element of T star squared, which is simply a way of saying that in any local patch, as you make a holomorphic change of coordinates, this is how a quadratic differential transforms. And given a quadratic differential, if you take the modulus and its square root, you get a length element that transforms as length elements should. And so obviously, well, not obviously, but anyway, it turns out that because of this holomorphic property of the quadratic differential, so the matrix is arising from holomorphic quantity. And that is what ensures the fact that the metric is of minimal area. So, so quadratic differentials are quite nice, and they, there is a special class of quadratic differential, which is called Jenkins-Trebles quadratic differentials, which have the following property. First, let me define a horizontal trajectory of a quadratic differential is a trajectory such that the quadratic differential is real and positive. And the consider the prototypical example, which is the one that tells us almost everything. Let me consider a double pole for the quadratic differential. Then if you compute fz of dz squared, so dz in polar coordinates, let me write z as rho e to the I theta. And let me consider only trajectories around, so let me consider the rho equals zero type of trajectories. So if you do this trivial calculation, you will find that this thing is equal to a d theta squared, which is real and positive. So in this particular case, horizontal trajectories are concentric circles around the double pole. And you see that all of these concentric circles have the same length in the definition of length provided by the quadratic differential. So the circumference here is clearly equal to 2 pi times a. Because if I use the presentation I was using before in terms of semi-infinite cylinders, well, clearly that becomes the horizontal section of the cylinder. Is that clear? So where this is the point P, which is all the way down here. And the horizontal trajectories are just what, in this presentation of the coordinates, are circles. So anyway, to make a long story short, it turns out that there is a nice class of quadratic differentials such that horizontal trajectory cover the whole surface, and they are closed up to a set of measure zero. So that means that there are certain basins of attractions on the surface where you sort of go around, and these are horizontal trajectories. And then at some point, there are some critical lines that separate this basin of attraction given by the double poles of the quadratic differential, and the resulting critical surfaces. The critical curves are a set of measures. So they're just some lines that you draw on the surface. These are the lines where the semi-infinite cylinder get glued. So this gives you an explicit description of the gluing pattern of the semi-infinite cylinders. The semi-infinite cylinders are the set of horizontal trajectories in each of these basins of attraction. And then the critical trajectory is where the semi-infinite cylinders meet. And that's, of course, the way things were proven, proving theorems about existence of quadratic differentials on the surface. So anyway, I think this is this more or less concludes what I want to tell you about the composition of the moduli space. But you see, now there is hope, because given the fact that, so in some sense, the point I'm trying to emphasize is that this gives you a much simpler description of the closely moduli space. You add H extra numbers, and the composition is now a trivial one. It's the one given by Open-Swing field theory. And in some sense, that is sort of a microscopic route to open-closed duality. That's what I'm trying to say. So unless there are questions, now let me move on to some to the concrete case in which I can really make this philosophy precise. So I was showing you last time. What is one missing?
Yes.
Nothing.
Well,
what you, in some sense, are missing, you are always constrained to have. You are always constrained to have surfaces with at least one puncture. But in some sense, what we're really interested in a closing theory, at least perturbatively, is calculation of correlators. So if you want to compute a closing correlator, you naturally have punctures. Yes. At the level of S matrix elements of closed strings, which, I mean, I'm doing everything perturbatively, so I. At the level of closing perturbation theory, if you, apart from the vacuum energy, so apart from that one number, I'm not missing anything. Because given a surface with any number of punctures, the idea is that I want to blow up these punctures to holes and claim that now I can compute everything from the open channel. And of course, the non-trivial thing that one needs to do is to engineer some magic open string boundary conditions on this hole that give me precisely the puncture that that you want. So that's a non-trivial step. That
could you have any external state you want? They're represented by some boundary condition.
So of course that's a part where speculations. Like, I mean, I don't really know. In your favorite physical theory, of course, I don't know how to do this. So, but in there is a class of examples where we actually know how to do this, where we actually know how to represent every closed string state as arising from a shrinking hole, in some sense. And the class of examples is all of topological string theories. And I would say all of non-critical strings in dimension smaller or equal than one. And beyond that, I don't quite know. I strongly suspect that, we can leave speculations for next time. But as I will try to describe, what makes the hole become just a local insertion on the worksheet is the non-trivial fun of Liouville theory. So I don't know how to do this, and possibly it's impossible to do this in a flat 10-dimensional background. Yeah, it's probably. I don't know how to do it, and maybe there are reasons why that is impossible to do. But of course, what I have in mind is not the critical bosonic thing; it's the SFT. And in the SFT, on the other hand, there are very good reasons why you may hope that something precisely like that happens. Yeah. So. Well, I mean, okay, the statement level of the moduli space clearly is a completely general one.
But you pointed out very correctly, there is an issue of translation between two languages.
That's right.
And if one could go to that and would bypass completely.
Right, but in some sense, I'm not sure whether I want this philosophy to apply to the critical bosonic string or even the critical superstring. Where I really want this philosophy to work is in the case of ADS-CFT. And there, perhaps we can leave speculations to next time. And there, I think there are good reasons to believe that your non-trivial closing vertex operator, which are in some sense inserted at the analog of S matrix elements in the SFT is conformal to correlators on the boundary. And there are perhaps good reason to believe that you may be able to blow up those vertex operators to holes of the dual open theory. And that's really the example that where one would like to realize these ideas. Anyway, so I'm sure you can, yeah. I'm in the sense that I don't see why not. I mean, you have to do a projection on, yeah. Yes, yes. But it looks like a safe bet that this will carry. Okay, so now let's get down to earth. So given the speculations about the theory of everything or to the future, we can do the a zero-dimensional matrix model, and which is this Concievich matrix model that I was showing you last time. I can diagonalize a matrix Z with no loss of generality. And so this is my toy model. In fact, it is a toy model, but there is a very precise sense in which this is, as I will tell you in the remaining time today and the next time, in which this is an open string field theory. In some sense, you know, if you had to find a toy model for Witten string field theory, which takes this, I haven't really described in detail what this formal expression means, but I hope you see the analogy with the Concievich matrix model. And as I will show in some detail, there is a sense in which the Witten string field theory is literally the matrix model, but for which string theory? That's the question. So now what I want to find is a string theory and some appropriate D-brains such that the full Witten's open string field theory on n of these D-brains is the Concievich matrix model. That's the goal. And if I can do that, then I can see whether this philosophy works or not. And in that case, it will work, of course. Then becomes a matter of debate whether it worked because the model was so simple, or it worked because it is going to work also in more less non-trivial, less trivial cases like ADS-CFT proper. So I can perhaps now switch back to the computer. I need to give you a lightning review of non-critical bosonic strings. I don't want to enter too much in details, but so I was mentioning last time that models of central charge model are in fact also equal than one, but let's focus on models of central charge model than one, are exactly solved by a very different class of matrix models, which are the one that used to triangulate the surface. So let's ignore that aspect. We can come back to the significance of it next time, maybe, if you are interested. But the fact is that if you consider a PQ minimal model, which has central charge smaller than one, and you couple it to gravity, you obtain an exactly solvable closed-string theory. So I sort of need to assume that you know at least vaguely what I'm talking about, but the point is that you can you follow the rules of the usual rules in which you construct a string theory, And it turns out that if you look at the BPZ paper, you discover that the PQ minimum models have this central charge. So to make up for the critical central charge or the bosonic string, you need to introduce the appropriate Liouville. So I hope you know at least roughly what I'm trying to say. So let me just say a few words. If you follow Polyakov's gauge fixing of the bosonic string in the non-critical dimension, the conformal factor of the metric will not decouple, and an alternative point of view is that we are doing critical bosonic string with an extra sector, which is, so this is of course a worksheet action for a scalar field, the Liouville mode, which is the originally started its life as a conformal factor of the worksheet metric, which has a certain background charge, which is what gives it a non-trivial value of the central charge. And we are also adding a potential that turns out to be rather, to make the theory rather non-trivial, but in recent years, the theory has actually been solved exactly. And that's what will allow us to make some progress. So that's what we do. We consider you can think of doing critical bosonic strings where you have a Mellor minimal model, and then you have a Liouville conformal field theory, and then, of course, the usual representation ghosts, and those are, and then you follow the usual rules of the game to define vertex operators and scattering amplitudes. So, very good. So, the claim is that the Concevich matrix model arises in some sense. What is the simplest possible theory could imagine? Is the one where P and Q have the lowest possible values. That's the 2,1 theory. In some sense, you can regard that as the simplest string theory you can ever think of. So I'm slightly cheating in the sense that if you, of course, you will recall that in the PPZ construction, it was important that P and Q were relatively prime. So that's not the case for 2 and 1. So this is a slight extension of the PPZ construction. In fact, the central charge, if you use these formulas for the Mellor theory, turns out to be equal to minus 2. And in fact, the theory is not minimal. There's an infinite set of primary fields, but there is a definite sense in which this theory is even simpler than the actual minimal ones. So let me, maybe I should change pace and go to the computer, but I think actually I kind of enjoy the blackboard. Also, it allows me to go a little bit slower, which I'm not sure it's a bad thing. So
is that related somehow to the theory of two anti-commuting scalar fields?
Absolutely. So you are familiar with systems with central charge minus 2. They come, for example, in the superstring from bosonization to periconformal because it's the usual Xieta system. So in fact, I want to change notation slightly and call Xi theta 1 and eta d of theta 2. You will recall that the dimension of Xi is 0 and the dimension of eta is 1, and this puts them on a more symmetric footing because now both theta 1 and theta 2 have dimension 0. And if I expand now d theta a, where a is either 1 or 2, let's be precise, I can do the following, of course. These are my mode. This is my mode expansion. And then it's not difficult to see what are the vertex operators, of course. The standard vertex operator you want to write down for the theory, well, which form will they have? Well, the simplest one, clearly, the unintegrated vertex operator will have a C-ghost. That will have a Mellor primary vertex operator. And then, well, I didn't tell you this, but I hope that you're familiar with the basics of what I'm trying to say. I need to dress the Mellor vertex operator with an appropriate exponential of the Liouville mode so that this is BRC invariant, which means that the total dimension here should be equal to 1 in the whole, I mean, of course, separately from homomorphic and anti-homomorphic part. So that those are the obvious vertex operators. So we know everything at this point because the dimension of the Liouville field alpha is equal, put a 2 here, is equal to alpha q minus alpha. And it's a simple exercise to work out what are the primary fields here. In fact, let me just do it. Let's first use only the D1 oscillators. The simplest vertex operator is going to be this one. And then, since these guys are anti-commuting, the next one will be like this. And the next one will be like this. And so forth, and so on. There is an infinite series of them. And they have dimension delta k equals k plus 1 over 2. Of course, I could have done the same thing with, instead of using the expansion of theta 1, the expansion of theta 2. And in fact, it's obvious from the way I wrote this vertex operator that there's an SL2 symmetry that acts on this doublet. So if you think about it a little bit, it's clear that each of these guys will have SL2 partners. And in fact, there is a whole multiplet of SL2 spin k over 2 for each k. So in this case, of course, it would be a doublet of the form. That's what I would call a spin high half doublet for, you see what I mean, right? So, and in fact, that exhausts the set of Mellor primaries. Okay? So it turns out that the right thing to do to construct the Mellor vertex operator is to combine holomorphic and anti-holomorphic part in such a way that this guy is an SL2 singlet. The resulting Mellor operator has dimension for the holomorphic and anti-holomorphic part equal to this. This is the Mellor dimension. And if you use this formula, you find that alpha k is 1 minus k, 1 minus k, 1 over square root 2. Doesn't really matter. There's a way in which you can choose now the Liouville dressing so that these are physical vertex operators. And let's call these guys O2k plus 1. The reason why I'm insisting on this label to be odd rather than using all the rather than call them simply OK is that this is the natural way of labeling them because it turns out that you could start introducing twisted sectors and that would be sort of between the cracks of one odd operator to the next odd one. And this is the natural labeling in terms of the exact solution of the theory that we're going to see shortly. So anyway, I went through this part perhaps a little bit slowly, but all I want to emphasize, I'm just constructing a simple closing theory following the usual rules in the book. There's a Mellor theory, there's a Liouville sector, you construct your set of vertex operators, and of course, the theory is very simple because there is a numerable infinity of physical vertex operator. There is no exponential growth of states, at least of single particle. I mean, I don't want to put any more words on this, but there is a set, there is a simple set of vertex operators. And what are the observables of the theory? Well, clearly now you can compute S matrix elements, and as usual, they will be obtained by following the usual rules, inserting the punctures and computing. So that's the definition from the point of view of the continuum worksheet theory. Of course, as you know, if you have ever tried to do a calculation in string theory, if you follow this route, you will be able to compute a few tree-level diagrams, perhaps a couple of one-loop diagrams, and then, of course, you're stuck because it's very complicated. You need to compute the CFT correlators and then to integrate over the moduli space of surfaces, and it's just hard. So, and that's where, of course, the exact solution provided by the double scalemetry models is extremely helpful. So it turns out that you can solve exactly the theory using a very different approach from this continuum definition I'm giving you. And in fact, here is sort of the grid of C's more than one theories. Again, it's slightly imprecise because, strictly speaking, only P and Q relatively prime should be part of the grid. And the Y dots, of which the 2-1 model is the simplest one, are in some sense out of the grid because they're not really minimal models. But there is a sense which they are, in fact, more fundamental even than the minimal ones. And the reason why they're more fundamental is that if you know the solution of the Y dot theory, which turns out to be considerably simpler than the solution of the black dot theory, you can get all the theories in the same row by perturbing the action. This is meant to be the space-time effective action in some sense. It's the action that computes all correlators by taking the derivative with respect to the sources Tn. You can get the models in the same row by simply deforming the theory. In other terms, if you tell me all the correlators of the 2,1 model, I can get the correlators of the next non-trivial model, which is 2,3. The 2,2 really doesn't make sense. I should redraw this grid. The 2,3 model, if you compute the central charge, which using the formula that I erase, the central charge is zero. And this is, in some sense, the prototype of what you can solve with a matrix model. It's pure gravity. There's no Maillard sector. It's just the Liouville. And but the solution of the pure gravity model is contained, the solution of the 2,1 model, by simply deforming the closing background. In other terms, the 2,3 theory is obtained from the 2,1 theory by turning on some non-trivial values for these sources, Tn's. And you can play the same game all in the same row. It actually turns out, the more precise and formal way to say this is that the generating function of all correlators is a tau function of the integrable hierarchy. And these sources, Tn's, are the times of the integrable hierarchy. And you can get the solution of all the models by simply tuning the sources at different critical points. Okay. So this is what I said here. So 2,1 model, which I've described the continuum definition of this observable O to K plus 1. There's a closing partition function that you can formally write down in such a fashion. And the amazing fact you discover by the matrix model solution is that to all orders, if you just sum it up, the whole thing, it's a tau function of an appropriate integrable hierarchy. It obeys also some extra condition that for the experts, it's called the string equation. But anyway, the upshot is that you just know all the correlators explicit to orders in perturbation theory. So maybe I should should stop here. So this is the, in some sense it's as simple a string theory as you can get. But it is simple in some sense because we know the exact solution, not so much because the continuum formulation is any easier. It is a little bit easier than an ordinary string theory because, well, there's no momentum. But it's not so much easier. If you just had to rely on standard perturbative worship techniques, we would not go any further than we can go in more realistic examples. So the claim is that will be the subject of the next lecture, is that the Concievich model arises as the open string theory on appropriate D-brains in this theory. And we will be able to see precisely the correlators of crossing vertex operators are obtained by blowing up each puncture to a hole. Thank you.
Any comments, questions?
Concerning your relation between open and closer. Your relation between open and closed moduli spaces. Can one formulate in old Schottky parameterization? Or
say it again?
Can one see that just doing the old Schottky parameterization?
I think that would be very complicated.
Would be too complicated.
Yeah, right? I think I think this is really the shortest. There's a relation. I think from Penner's work, you can get some kind of description of hyperbolic geometry, which is perhaps also simple. I think this is even simpler.
Any more questions? Well, if not, let's thank the speaker again.
Tem areia na praia de fora, tem.